it once, pretty mama, ain't gonna tell you no more. You can get all my love, and if you just let him go, I said, look at here, babe. I'm getting tired of where you're dogging me. God, I love you, pretty mama, better than the woman that I ever seen. Baby, baby.
I'm a cane bee buzzing round your bin. I'm a cane bee buzzing round your bin. When you see me buzzing, let your bee in. I'm a cane bee buzzing round your hive. I'm a cane bee buzzing round your hive. I don't want you making honey, baby, for no other guy. Yes, Lord. See me coming, hide your window high. When you see me coming, hide your window high. Eyes on your honeybee, I don't want you buzzing for no other guy. I'm a king bee, buzzing all night long. I'm a king bee, buzzing all night long. I don't want you making honey, all begging of me from now on. One more time, boy. I'm a king bee buzzing round your hive. I'm a king bee buzzing round your hive. Well, I don't want you buzzing, making honey from another guy.
Three toilets will take over the world, and everyone, everywhere will listen to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
All right, welcome everybody. Let's get started after a long holiday weekend in the United States, federal holiday. We were off with the latest COVID news. It's really pretty good. In five states, the COVID situation is getting worse. In 45 plus DC, it's getting significantly better to the point where cases in the United States have now plummeted by about 50% since their Delta peak. So all good news. Vaccine doses are up a little bit. Cases are down. Deaths are now down. And the question is becoming, what happens in the winter season? So let's start at the very beginning. How are cases looking globally? Globally, cases are down from their Delta peak of about 660,000 a day, an insane number, down to about 400,000 a day, 404,000 a day. That's a decline of nearly 39%. Now, in the United States, cases are down even more precipitously, if you believe the data, which I think we've talked about this before. Big picture, we mostly can, even if we're not getting the full story from every single state. Cases in the U.S. down from their Delta peak of about 167,000 to about 85,000 cases a day. Still a ton of cases, but it's a decline of, it's about 50%, 49 point something percent. Now, the caveat here is, do those numbers include what is obviously slower reporting thanks to the long holiday weekend? These numbers might end up being adjusted up a little bit as the testing and reporting kind of catches up and is integrated into these numbers. But big picture, a significant decline at this point. In terms of deaths, which often follow cases by 3 to 4 weeks, globally, deaths are down about 34% from their Delta peak, which, remember, it's not the full pandemic peak, okay? The Delta global death peak was about 10,000 deaths a day. At one point, we were at 14,000 in a previous peak. So down from about 10,000 a day to like 6,750. Within the United States, the death decline is not quite as sharp. Deaths in the U.S. down about 26% from their Delta peak, now around 1,400 per day. Remember this relevant data point when we want to think about just how are we doing in general. In a normal flu season in the U.S., there's about 100 deaths a day. Again, they're not really 100 a day. They're concentrated during flu season. You've got more than 100 a day during flu season, fewer than 100 a day in the summer, but about 100 a day. COVID, of course, is still way, way higher than that, multiples higher. In terms of vaccination, we are seeing daily vaccine doses trickle up a little bit. Remember that daily vaccinations at one point had surpassed 3 million new doses per day in the U.S. That was in mid-April. That has come all the way down, at one point, down to 500,000 new doses a day. Pathetic number, completely pathetic. And then as the Delta variant started to surge, so did vaccination. As Joe Biden announced some vaccine requirements, there was another surge in vaccination. And recently, we've seen daily doses administered in the U.S. up to about 1 million a day. We could be doing so much better. We have so many doses available. But you still prefer to see 1 million per day rather than 500,000. Globally, new doses are also up. You might remember last week I said, hey guys, we're seeing 23 million doses a day. We're up to 25 million doses a day globally. These are still really small numbers, but I'll mention them. Last week, we were seeing 0.29% of the population getting a dose. That's up to now 0.32% of the global population is getting a dose each day. These are tiny, tiny numbers, but it's an increase, and we'll take any increase that we can get. Now, compared to the vaccination rate of any other planet in our solar system, we're doing really well. We're really kicking some ass if we compare Earth to other planets. Where do we go from here? Not really clear. We've not yet won. I saw a funny article which said Fauci says we shouldn't declare victory prematurely. And I was thinking we shouldn't declare victory prematurely again, because we already did. I mean, some places never conceded there was even a battle, but there were some premature declarations of victory as well. Beyond that, we've got to see what happens in terms of the winter. There is the view that, coinciding with flu season, we're going to see another COVID peak. If we're going to see that, we would expect to see the numbers turn around relatively quickly as we're starting to get into the cold season in much of the country. In terms of those who say we're not going to see it, they are saying no, because of vaccination and because of everything that's going on, this is now completely sort of like unlinked from the seasonality of flu season. We're not going to see a winter spike. Remains to be seen. In about 6 weeks, we're going to know. But in the interim, let's hope things continue going in the right direction. We have news in terms of the debt ceiling. I'm going to give you the news, but I'm also going to tell you why I really haven't been covering the debt ceiling story that much. And I know that there's some in the audience who agree with my reasoning, and there's some in the audience who don't. So to begin with, the House is going to vote to extend the debt ceiling through early December, CNN reporting on this. The House of Representatives expected to vote today to extend the debt limit through early December after the Senate approved a stopgap measure last week in a bid to avert a catastrophic default and economic disaster. Once the Democratic-controlled House passes the short-term extension, it will be cleared for President Joe Biden's signature. Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, warned lawmakers the federal government will likely run out of cash by October 18 unless Congress raises the debt ceiling, setting up a ticking clock and high stakes. Congress may not even have that long to act, since the deadline is more of a best-guess estimate than a set-in-stone deadline. That dynamic intensified pressure on Democrats and Republicans to reach a deal to address the debt limit. Okay, so what we're talking about here is passing a debt limit increase to enable the Treasury to keep borrowing money to pay bills for 2 months. This would be temporary. This will set up another round of the exact same thing in December. So why haven't I been talking about this that much? Quite frankly, and I want to be careful with my language, you as an individual should barely care about this. The debt ceiling was created in the first place to put a limit on how much debt the government could take on without requiring a really clumsy process that was in place beforehand. We don't even need to go over the process that was in place beforehand. The point was just let them take on debt, but cap it so they can't go beyond a certain amount without coming back to us. It's sort of like, actually, Sahil Bloom has a good Twitter thread on this. And Sahil tweeted, this is sort of like, it used to be that you had to get approval every time you wanted to buy something on your credit card. Now it's you just have a spending limit in total on the credit card, and you can buy whatever you want until you hit that limit. If you hit the limit, you got to ask for an increase. Every once in a while, you're going to need to raise it. Why? Well, the country keeps growing, the economy keeps growing, and so even if you maintain the same percentage of the economy in debt, the raw numbers are going to go up over time. But this entire process was basically a rubber stamp. We've got to raise it. We've got to raise it. We're a growing country. Our economy grows. We've got to raise the debt ceiling. Debt ceiling increases, remember, are needed for prior spending that's already been authorized. Republicans like to play this game where they say, we're not going to do this and allow Democrats to keep spending us into debt oblivion. Hold on. That's grandstanding. That's a lie. They want to pretend that this is to stop Democrats from spending. It's for prior spending that was already approved by Congress. The fear is, if they don't do this, the U.S. will default on its debt. So then all the fear-mongering and the headlines start. And Republicans say, we're going to default because we have too much debt and Democrats won't stop spending. The reality is, we default if Republicans don't raise the debt ceiling, which is supposed to be merely perfunctory. Some Republicans will say that's the problem. It can't be perfunctory that we go into more and more and more debt. But the time to talk about that is when you authorize the spending that now simply needs to be paid for. And what we end up doing is giving oxygen to something where nobody really benefits from there being more stories about the debt ceiling. We're actually giving them attention which makes them more eager not to just raise the debt ceiling and let's continue. So they're going to get this solved for 2 months. It'll come up again in December. It'll get solved again. And it's in no one's interest to actually not raise the debt ceiling over the long term. And if people didn't ignorantly react to it, it would get less oxygen to begin with. And it would deflate this as something that Republicans want to get attention for. Think about the number of interviews over the last, you know, weeks, months, however long, all about this. And in the interviews, they're not even mentioning the fundamental point, which is we are now, Republicans, we are now trying not to raise the debt ceiling to pay for spending we already approved. We already approved the spending. It's not for new spending. It's not for Joe Biden's new proposals. It's just not what it's for. So the reason I haven't been covering it is this really shouldn't be a thing in that this is just a perfunctory part of running government. You want to run government a different way where this doesn't come up. We could talk about that. You want to have a bigger conversation about debt and deficit. We can do that. But this is for already approved spending. You can't now say, well, we approved it, but we're not going to cut the check, so to speak, or allow the spending to happen to cover, allow the debt ceiling to increase to cover the spending. That's why I haven't been covering it. I don't think any of us really benefit from talking endlessly about this. If you disagree with me, let me know. Next Tuesday, 1 week from today, 6 p.m. Eastern, we'll be having the David Pakman Show live town hall. It will be streaming on one place only, the David Pakman Show second YouTube channel. That's Pakman Live, youtube.com/Pakman Live. We'll be opening the phone lines. Members will get priority, but it'll be open to everyone. You can sign up at joinpakman.com. Subscribe free to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Pakman Live. And we'll be live next Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern time. I hope to see you there. Remember that the David Pakman Show is primarily funded by viewers and listeners like you through our membership program. You can grab a membership at joinpakman.com, whether you watch on YouTube or listen to the podcast. By the way, audio podcast, record week last week for the year. More people listened to the audio podcast last week than in any week dating all the way back to the week after the election, November of 2020, when things were crazy. We haven't even been promoting the audio podcast, but it's going nuts. So thanks to everybody who's been listening, and you can sign up at joinpakman.com. You get a bunch of great perks, including the daily bonus show just for our members. So I've talked before about the problem of chiropractors, and now we are actually seeing chiropractors who, many of whom are anti-vaccine. And I'll talk about what I mean when I say many. Chiropractors are increasingly a force of misinformation, as reported by the Associated Press. Let's read a little bit of this article, and then I'm going to give you some of my thoughts. This is an article from Providence, Rhode Island, about an event called VaxCon 21. Promoted as teaching people the uncensored truth about COVID vaccines. And people went, participants traveled from around the country to a Wisconsin Dells resort for a sold-out convention that was a sea of misinformation and conspiracy theories. The featured speaker was the anti-vax activist from the 2020 movie Plandemic. The convention was organized by members of a profession that has become a major purveyor of vaccine misinformation during the pandemic, chiropractors. At a time when the Surgeon General says misinformation has become an urgent threat to public health, an investigation by the AP found a vocal and influential group of chiropractors capitalizing on the pandemic by sowing fear and mistrust of vaccines. They've touted supplements as alternatives to vaccines, written doctor's notes to allow patients to get out of mask and immunization mandates, donated large sums of money to anti-vaccine organizations, and sold anti-vaccine ads on Facebook and Instagram, the AP discovered. One chiropractor gave thousands to a super PAC hosting anti-vaccine pro-Trump rally on January 6th. They have also been the leading force behind anti-vax events like the one in Wisconsin, where hundreds of chiropractors from around the country shelled out $299 to attend. The AP found chiropractors were allowed to earn continuing ed credits to maintain their licenses in at least 10 states. Going on to say, public health advocates are alarmed by the number of chiropractors hitching themselves to the anti-vaccine movement, using their public prominence and sheen of medical expertise to undermine the nation's response to a pandemic that has killed 700,000. So let's talk about chiropractors, okay? I'm not 100% against chiropractors. I'm about 85% against them. And here's what I'll tell you by that. In some places, people go to a chiropractor almost like a primary care doctor. In fact, in California, chiropractors can be PCPs. And they are often anti-vaccine, and they often promote a ton of different woo. So the stuff from chiropractors that's a disaster includes things like for the anti-vaccine stuff, as well as chiropractic adjustments as treatments for systemic conditions of different kinds, infections, etc., neck adjustments, back adjustments, etc. Just simply no evidence that they treat infections and other systemic conditions. Okay, number two, a lot of chiropractors are in the woo. Stuff like, and you can see some of these on YouTube. I mean, there's people that go to chiropractors on YouTube, they film it, and you hear stuff like, make sure to drink a lot of extra water after the adjustment to flush out the toxins released by the back cracking and the neck stuff that I did. That's total nonsense. I mean, just when you think about how the body works, drink water to flush through the kidneys for a adjustment to, it just doesn't make sense. Okay, so that you got to be very, very careful with. Neck stuff, check out on YouTube and articles from spine surgeons and back surgeons about the risk of neck adjustments and what can happen from neck manipulations done by chiropractors. So all of this stuff is horrible, huge, you know, at best, you're spending money on something that will do nothing. And at worst, you could end up really hurt. Now, what's the part that maybe is okay? There are some things chiropractors do that are also done by physical therapists and are more within the realm of reality as long as you understand their goal. So like, for example, I once went to a physical therapist when I was having some back pain, and they do some very specific back cracking things, not where you put a strap under your neck and pull to extend, no, but just some specific back cracking things, which they say, this is not really treatment, but while we're building a routine for you to strengthen muscles and maybe deal with a spasm or whatever, some of these specific back crackings can provide some short-term relief. Okay. Beyond that, we got to be really careful with chiropractors. So it's not a surprise that this is a group that is doing things that are horrible, including, as we covered in Florida, saying, just come on down and I'll sign off on a mask or vaccine exemption for you. And that is extraordinarily concerning. And I'm really glad that the AP is writing about this. It says the purveyors of vaccine misinformation represent a small but vocal minority of the nation's 70,000 chiropractors, many of whom advocate for vaccines. So I think that that's important. And what I've said to people when they say, so should no one go to a chiropractor? This is not my idea. You can find this information online. What should be done if you're considering going to a chiropractor is you call up and you actually ask their view on chiropractic adjustments. And you say, do you believe chiropractic adjustments can be used to, for example, treat things like sinus infections or, I mean, you know, cancer, imagine. What's your view on vaccination, etc.? You can usually pretty quickly, if you ask, there's like 5 or 6 questions you can find online to ask a possible chiropractor. You can pretty quickly suss out like which side of things they're on. You can also more than likely get what you need from a physical therapist. And there you're talking about different type of setting, and that may be something to consider as well. But chiropractors, increasingly a source of anti-vaccine disinformation. Let's move on to another source of disinformation. Tucker Carlson's show on Fox News is a major catalyst of disinformation, and his ratings are really good. So what is he doing now? he's going further down the conspiracy rabbit hole to the point that you can't even understand what he's saying. This is a really common characteristic among charlatans, among pseudoscience purveyors and others. At a certain point, the things they say no longer make sense to anyone, even their followers. But that's okay because their followers assume it must make sense to someone, so I'm going to just go with it. If you look back at Jim Jones from the People's Temple, this is the guy who got his followers to drink cyanide-laced Kool-Aid and kill themselves. His so-called teachings over time would make less and less sense to his followers. And some of them would be sort of conflicted, but the fact that it made no sense became a source of his power. He must really be telling us some high-level stuff here. I had the good sense to start following him. I'm not understanding what he's saying, but it must really be important stuff. Alex Jones, his conspiracy theories became and have become increasingly unintelligible. So anyway, here's basically an Alex Jones type conspiracy theory from Tucker Carlson related to the White House looking set that the Biden administration used for Joe Biden's third vaccine dose. Look at all of the things that Tucker Carlson infers from the fact that the White House has like a set that looks like one room from the White House. Take a look at this.
And keep them informed of international incidents. Instead, they are, in some cases, freelancing to crush anyone who opposes their power. Mike Flynn, for example, he was briefly the national security advisor in the Trump administration. What we learned from the destruction of Mike Flynn, really, was that, sure, you can elect Donald Trump president, but does he really run the executive branch of government?
Sorry, and I'm realizing I started this too late. We're getting to Mike Flynn in a moment, but let's pick it up at the beginning.
Take a look at the latest example. These are pictures of a fake White House set that the Biden administration has, for some reason, constructed across the street from the actual White House. It's in an auditorium at the Eisenhower Executive Office Building. Why go to the trouble? They already have a White House. Well, Stephen Miller spent the last 4 years in the White House as an advisor to Trump, and here's his explanation for it, because he would know. Quote, the reason Biden uses this bizarre virtual set for televised meetings, not an actual room like the East Room, the Cabinet, the Oval, the Roosevelt sit room, etc., there are a lot of rooms. The reason he does this is because it allows him to read a script directly from a face-on monitor and without teleprompter glass that can be seen on camera.
So this is actually quite silly. Because if that was the concern, you could just do that by setting up a different camera angle in any of the rooms Tucker mentioned. Like, even at its core, it doesn't even pass the sniff test.
Oh. Now, we can't verify that that's true, but it certainly sounds right.
Well, maybe.
Joe Biden can't speak from the Oval Office because he's not sure what to say, so he has to read it all here. So that raises a much deeper question. The question is not, is Joe Biden mentally impaired? Obviously he is, and again, we're not going to gloat over it. But a much more important question for the rest of us is, if he's not running the government, then who is? That's a real question. Clearly, the FBI, the DOJ, and the military are already acting independently of the elected president of the United States. As you just saw, they don't even keep him informed of international incidents. Instead, they are, in some cases, freelancing to crush anyone who opposes their power.
Okay, so it's starting to get very, very conspiratorial. And then just to show you like how far this all goes, here's one more example. Here's Tucker's preview of an interview with Trump's former national security advisor, Michael Flynn. And he's talking about deep state conspiracy theories.
I sat down with a long interview with Mike Flynn. It's coming out Monday. And he told us what is really obvious to everyone who watches. An unelected group within Washington effectively runs the country without reference to voters. Here's his assessment.
We have two separate governments. We have the one that actually gets elected and goes into office, and then you have a government inside of Washington, D.C. that operates under no rules, no authorities other than their own or who's ever in charge of their
organization. Sounds like that government was still controlled by Barack Obama.
Yeah, and I would say that to a degree is what we're operating with today.
By the way, Mike Flynn is not some internet celebrity or conservative activist. He was a three-star general.
Who became a complete and total lunatic once he started working for Trump, or before, and we just didn't notice.
An intelligence agency. He was the number two guy for all American intelligence. He spent his entire life working in the federal government and succeeding at that. So he knows what he's talking about. He is a reliable guide to how the government actually works. Our whole conversation with Mike Flynn, by the way, is
he could not be a less reliable guide as to how the government works. Mike Flynn seems to have had something happen that has made him completely delusional about even the basic facts of how the world works. So this is a really, they're basically talking about like an Obama-run deep state of some kind. And this has many, many iterations. This is a family of conspiracies, much studied, significant amount of literature on it. Sometimes it's called deep state. It's a shadow government of some kind. Sometimes you call it the deep state. Sometimes it's the Freemasons. Sometimes it's the Jews. Sometimes it's the Vatican. Could be the Trilateral Commission, the Illuminati, the Bilderbergs. There's a bunch of versions of it. And this seems to be what Tucker Carlson's audience now wants. So when we talk about OAN and Newsmax are well beyond Fox News in terms of what they're willing to put on air. Yeah, it's true in a way, and yet look at what's happening on Tucker's show lately. And then in addition, when we say, well, you've got MSNBC, which is left, and Fox News, which is right, sure, they're both corporate media networks with different editorial bents, but there is nothing on MSNBC that is equivalent to this. So this seems to be what Tucker's audience wants, and Fox News seems to be gleefully promoting it and signal boosting it and accepting it. And again, I think it's because of the financial incentives. Even though there have been advertiser troubles with Tucker and his show, the ratings are still there. And overall, this is a good show for Fox News' business model. We're going to have more of this on our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. All right, these next two stories are going to contain video clips really not suitable for children. There's no gore or anything like that, but you'll understand, I think, as we go. So Donald Trump held a rally over the weekend. Just another rally, right? Who cares? Well, this one was actually one of the most disturbing and alarming rallies I can remember. Maybe the most alarming I've seen from Trump, because it had all the normal things. It had the lies, and we'll look at some of the lies. It had the delusional crowds whose ignorance has been completely weaponized, which we will look at. The cheering at horrible things, all of that. But this rally in the important election state of Iowa had some notable and key differences. First, as Dino Badala wrote for CNN, key Iowa Republican elected officials were there. At the Georgia rally a couple weeks ago, Trump attacked that state's Republican leaders. This time, this weekend in Iowa, despite the insanity of Trump for the last 6 years, Trump losing the White House for Republicans in 2018, losing the Senate and the White House in 2020, inciting a riot on January 6th, Iowa's Republican leaders were all there, and they are still supporting him, which is a very dark signal for democracy. Chuck Grassley, as Dino Badala wrote, after criticizing Trump's incitement of the January 6th riots, was right there in Iowa this weekend praising Donald Trump. So after all of it, in now October of 2021, Trump is still in control of the party. The blind loyalty is still there. And Trump spent the rally telling horrible, corrosive, demonstrable lies about the election of 2020. So let's jump right in. Trump heavily into the xenophobia. Here he is saying the Afghan refugees are people we'll, quote, soon be hearing about. He seems to be alluding to soon they're going to carry out attacks against the U.S. and you'll be hearing about it.
It was, oh, that was great. They had no idea who was getting on those planes. We still don't have any idea. Only 3% were qualified to be taken to a place called the United States of America. Isn't that something? 3%. You're going to be hearing from those people over the coming years in a very bad way, right?
Trump then talking about his travel ban as something to prevent people from coming here who want to blow up our cities.
The Democrat bill will also admit every foreign national previously denied under my national security travel ban. Remember, I had the travel ban. Everyone said, oh, what a horrible thing. I said, no, we really don't want people in our country who are going to blow up our cities, if you don't mind. We don't want Fifth Avenue blown up.
Now, remember that the travel ban was actually targeted at countries that were not source countries for people who came here and attacked the United States. Trump then moving on to the topic of abortion, saying Democrats support killing babies even after birth. Now, that's murder. No one supports that. It's also not legal, but take a listen to Trump.
Quickly, the bill abolishes the Hyde Amendment, forcing taxpayers to fund the far left's extreme abortion agenda, ripping babies from their mother's womb right up until the moment of birth, and in fact, killing babies even after birth. You saw that in Virginia with the governor of Virginia, after birth.
So that was a widely debunked fake news story from the right a couple years ago, actually. It's not true. The crowd maybe doesn't know, maybe doesn't care. Who knows? But they cheer. So then we get into the 2020 lies. Here's Donald Trump teasing the idea that he might come back, because remember, he didn't concede. Hillary conceded, he didn't.
Legitimate. They called it everything in the book. It was fine. When I say it, now here's the difference. Hillary conceded. I never conceded. Never.
That's how you fire up a low information crowd. Then Trump saying the corrupt media and Democrats used COVID to put in place mail-in voting. It's hard to even exactly follow what he's saying, but it's part of the 2020 big lie that he continues.
These people are so corrupt. The media, look, I don't need to do this, but the media is corrupt. And you know what? When I started, I'm so proud of this. Two things I proved. Number one, the elections are totally corrupt in our country. They have been for a long time, but never like they were this last time. They used COVID in order to cheat and rig. And the other thing is how dishonest the media was, because they were at 96% approval rating before I came along, and now they're like in, what, the 20s.
And then, just to show you how much he's in control of this crowd, the crowd actually starts chanting Trump won as Trump just tells lies about the 2020 election.
But let's hope he does. Our country needs it. Arizona needs it. And with all of those numbers being so horrible. We did.
As I've said before, Trump without his followers is really not much. But with the followers, it is something very serious and scary. Trump then continuing to struggle with certain words. Minneapolis, of course, Minneapolis. That's just par for the course now.
That's not working out too well. You see in Minnesota, Minneapolis there.
I went to a conference in Minneapolis once. It was weird, really, really weird. Trump then referring to someone as persnippity instead of persnickety.
He was with us all the way. Every time I needed something, you know, he's very persnippity sometimes, right? He's tough.
Persnickety, of course, means fussy. Persnippity, me, I don't know what that one means. Your guess is as good as mine. Trump then hilariously mentions, apparently he's serious. He'll quickly finish building the border wall. When? What are you talking about?
We will quickly complete the border wall and we will end illegal immigration. Once and for all, we will have to start it all over again.
Remember, he was going to do the border wall in one term. We all knew he wasn't, and he didn't. Didn't happen. Does the crowd know that? Do they care? I have no idea. Maybe this is that same kind of magical thinking we talked about, where they see themselves as being in like a war where individual facts don't matter. Just if Trump says it, you've got to cheer for it because you're part of the crowd. Is that what's going on here? And then ultimately, Trump wound down the rally with a completely unintelligible rant about critical race theory, including in the military.
We will ban critical race theory in our classrooms. We will ban that horrible, crazy, critical race theory in our military. We will ban it from our workplaces. We will ban it from our federal, state, and local governments. It will be banned, permanently banned, and will never be allowed to come back again.
I don't even know what I can really say about this, other than, as I've said before, I find it sort of quaint when they talk about banning a theory. What they mean is banning the teaching of it, right? Like, how do you ban a theory? But it seems what they mean is they want a gag order, which is, of course, very authoritarian and very much a restriction on what people can talk about, quite frankly. So absolutely delusional event. The crowd goers, as much as Trump, we're going to listen to the crowd goers in this next segment. But the really dangerous cherry on top is that at this stage of the game, this late in the game, prominent Iowa Republicans, Chuck Grassley, still openly supportive of Donald Trump after everything he did. 2024 is really looking as rough as you can imagine, and we'll have time to talk about it once we get beyond the midterms. Next, let's talk about the rally attendees. So Trump had a rally in Iowa over the weekend. We looked at the things that Trump himself said, and it was completely out of this world bonkers. Trump still getting support from Iowa Republicans. Chuck Grassley was there. So were others. What about the people that go to the rally? Because without them, Trump is just a guy speaking into a microphone. Really, really great stuff from Ron Filipkowski cataloging and covering the rally goers. So let's just go through some of these, and you're going to see really, again, what we're up against. Here is Jane. Jane says she decided to move from Alaska to Iowa when she heard Trump would be there. This is crazy. Take a listen.
I found out about the rally before I moved, so that was part of the incentive for moving as well. It's my first rally.
President Trump made someone move to Iowa to go to one of his rallies.
By the way, this young lady wearing a socialism sucks hat. There's no socialism in the United States, but socialism sucks is her hat.
Right.
What excites you the most about President Trump?
Oh my gosh, everything. He tells everything straight as it is. No lies, no BS, nothing. And that's what this country needs, absolutely.
No political correctness and
nothing,
all of that.
Nothing, no lies.
Okay, what? How do you, how, I mean, how? How? This is the most dishonest president we've ever seen. And part of what appeals to her is Trump tells it like it is and he doesn't lie. She also moved because Trump did a rally. I considered moving actually to Louisiana once when I heard Billy Joel was playing a concert there, and I was like, I should really move there. That makes sense. Okay, here's another woman who explains that her family hates Trump and she breaks down crying. This is really something to see.
Face. I know my whole family has turned liberal, and I don't know what happened because I didn't raise them that way. And they've all been brainwashed to think that he's the most horrible man ever when he's saving everyone.
Right.
I mean, I'm going to start getting emotional because everything depends on this. America depends on this. We have got to save. We've got to do everything we can. And I'm not even an American citizen. I was born in England, but I've been here since I was...
That, I don't know why I find that extra funny after the crying. I'm not even an American citizen, but she lives here. Okay.
And this is my home, and we've got to save it. We've just got to.
That means she doesn't even vote, which is interesting.
God wins in the end, right? That's why the enemy is lashing out right now.
We know we're going to suffer for a while, but it's going to be good. It's going to be more glorious than anything we've ever seen.
And you understand, I mean, the guy introduces the full religious thing. But then she talks about this idea of we're going to suffer in the short run. It's all this kind of Christian dominionism, extreme ideology.
We have to have faith in God and pray and do everything we can. Everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. We will. I mean, just keep the faith.
Complete faith that this man is going to save us. He's basically saving the world, just us, everyone. Everyone. And I just can't wait until I'm never going to say I told you so, but I'm just going to be just so happy. And I don't know what else to say. My husband was a United States Marine, and he died from Agent Orange from his time in Vietnam. And I'm alone.
So, I mean, that's, you know, at least her family figured out that they shouldn't support Trump. That's good. It shows us that even within families, some people can ultimately see reason. That's good. Here's another woman who explains that during Obama, Christians were persecuted, but then Trump came in and then they had freedom of religion, and Trump is like the most Christian president ever, which is just so not factually accurate.
Why is it that you support President Trump so much?
Oh, it's just heartbreaking what's going on in our country right now. When President Trump, when we were in Obama, you know, like as Christians, we've been persecuted a lot, you know?
That's not true.
Like, and then President Trump came, then all our rights are back, you know,
there were no rights that were reestablished for Christians under Trump.
Freedom of religion.
And you always had it. It's in the Constitution.
We're free. You know, President Trump is the most pro-Christian, most pro-Israel.
Trump may actually be an atheist. It's actually shocking how non-religious Trump has bamboozled so many people into thinking he's a Christian.
Pro-life. pro-life, you know, and all that.
Pro-life. He claims at 68 he became pro-life.
All his policies are amazing, you know, like he really taught us to, how to become patriot, you know, so and to love this country. So we were really, you know, glad for him. We're grateful for him. And now what's going on with the communism, all the mandates.
There's no communism.
You know, we're like being strangled, you know, that our freedom is being stolen from us. So it's really, you know, and all.
Now, of course, this is like a perfect example. If you actually ask her, give an example of a freedom you've lost in the last 9 months under Joe Biden, you would get an interesting conversation. If you said, give us an example of communism in the United States, it would get very interesting. The real question is this just a low IQ individual, or is this a brainwashed individual? Or is it both in some way? Here's one last one just to show you the craziness. Some guy said he was there to deliver legal documents to Trump, to help Trump. I don't know what the documents are supposed to do. Let's see.
Rich Thomas. Okay, Rich, go ahead. It says, you are the 46th president, period, says our Lord. Dear Mr. President Donald J. Trump, I have come to deliver legal documents to you so that you can give them to your legal team, period. Our King Jesus Christ has spoken to put you back in your office at the White House now.
It's funny. Are they legal documents or are they religious documents? If it's Jesus who has spoken to put Trump back in the White House, why is it even a question of legality? Like, isn't Jesus more powerful than legality?
Peace. Sincerely, Rich Thomas. Awesome. In other words, I had the legal documents. Here. To put President Trump back in office now.
Well, he does watch us, so that's it's very possible.
Words, Mr. Trump, look me up. I have the documents. I'm here at the rally. I'm waiting to deliver. King Jesus says it's time to deliver. Are you hearing me?
Absolutely. There's a real
moment. Okay, so King Jesus there says it is time to deliver. I don't know what we make of this. What I do know is it's really hard to reorient these people to reality, whether it's hard because of a just limited cognitive capacity, whether it's hard because of brainwashing, whether it's, you know, I'm not saying it's mental illness, but whether it's some kind of emotional imbalance. It's very tough to fix what we just saw. Let me know your thoughts. We'll take a quick break and be back after this. All right, so former President Donald Trump was interviewed it can't even really be called an interview. It was really sort of a softball propaganda piece. It was soft propaganda that Trump and Fox News host Sean Hannity did together. The big headline from this interview was that Donald Trump said, the Haitian immigrants are bringing AIDS into the United States. And some people wrote to me and they said, you know, David, there's a lot of AIDS in Haiti. So we have to consider that. Let's look at the clip and then we'll talk about it. Here is Trump explaining it all to Sean Hannity.
And you know, there's one other thing that nobody talks about. So we have hundreds of thousands of people flowing in from Haiti. Haiti has a tremendous AIDS problem. AIDS is a step beyond. AIDS is a real bad problem. So hundreds of thousands of people are coming into our country. And if you look at the stats, if you look at the numbers, if you look at just take a look at what's happening in Haiti, a tremendous problem with AIDS. Many of those people will probably have AIDS and they're coming into our country and we don't do anything about it. We let everybody come in.
So first of all, I was not able to find any reporting that hundreds of thousands of Haitians are coming in. I just was not able to find evidence of that. It is true that there is a higher rate of AIDS in Haiti than in many other countries. That's absolutely true. Its relevance in terms of what's going on with immigration, particularly when it is not a virulently contagious disease like COVID, although certainly more serious. It's just weird to make that the focus, again, unless you just want to portray a population as dirty, unclean, sick, and infected, which is like a classic of authoritarians towards minority groups. That's really what it is. If you really want to have a public health sort of conversation about migration, that can be done. That's not what Donald Trump is trying to do here. Check out this next segment. This is a segment that starts with Hannity asking Trump a question, but then he sort of gives the answer, and it's really weird. Like, where does the question end and the propaganda begin?
You know, you were last time on this program, and I think we need to put emphasis back on this, that your conversation with the leader of the Taliban before you ever discussed any deal of withdrawal was, number one, it was based on your stated threat that you would obliterate them. Do you remember exactly what you said? Because I have a source that says you were brutal to them and that you said you would destroy them, you would destroy their province, you would destroy it, and it would be everybody in the area would be dead. Did you say that?
Everybody.
So what I said, and I had a very strong conversation, I said, I hate to start the conversation this way, but that's the way it is. And I said, we would do serious, serious harm to them if they killed any of our soldiers or any American citizen.
So really Hannity kind of handling the question and answer for the most part there. Trump then, this is just amazing. Trump talks about vaccination and how a lot of people now don't want the vaccine. I can't tell if Trump is this stupid or if this is deliberate. Trump says, when I was president, everybody wanted the vaccine. Now that Biden's president, a lot of people don't, as if that's something that makes Trump look good.
Well, you know, I was saying the other day, it was very interesting. During my administration, everybody wanted the vaccine.
Right.
There was nobody saying, oh, gee, I don't want to take it. Now they say that, and that's because they don't trust the Biden administration. I can think of no other reason. But they say, we don't want it. We aren't going to take it. When I was there, everybody wanted it, and we were doing great with it.
Yeah. Well, you know. So let me translate that for you. What he means is, under me, my followers wanted the vaccine because they thought I made the vaccine. And left-wingers wanted it because they understand science and realized neither I nor Joe Biden had anything to do with the vaccine. Under Biden, left-wingers still want the vaccine because they understand science and realize that neither Trump nor Biden had anything to do with making the vaccine. But suddenly Trump's followers no longer want the vaccine because they're morons. That's what it means. And Trump's like, that means I'm great. Aren't I fantastic as a result of that? Isn't that an amazing thing? Trump then says that he defeated ISIS in Iran. I couldn't find any evidence of ISIS in Iran, but Trump says he did it.
We defeated 100% of the ISIS caliphate in Iraq and Iran, all over. But in Iraq, we knocked out the, and by the way, we did Iran indirectly a very big favor because they're not big fans of ISIS either.
True.
But Syria, we knocked out 100%. And we knocked out the leadership. And
So I was not able to find any evidence that ISIS was in Iran. He's right that Iranians have been very much opposed to ISIS for a long time, but just kind of weird. We knocked out ISIS in Iran. And then lastly, a completely unintelligible moment where Trump says something about you never used to hear the term mandate, but that we're in great shape or something.
Well, you know, we never heard the term mandate, but people have to have their freedoms, and we should be in a great shape between the people that get it. They should not have to. If you get COVID or whatever you want to call it, plenty of names, Wuhan virus, the China virus, you could call it we got plenty of names. But, well, you know,
Were you able to understand that? Because I certainly wasn't. But folks, everything is smelling like this guy wants to run again in 2024, and horribly, he actually might have a shot at winning. One of the things I truly love is when a radical ideologue gets confused and doesn't even understand their own rancid and disgusting talking points. When I was interviewed by Jesse Lee Peterson in Los Angeles a couple years ago, I had trouble not laughing when he would use terrible debunked talking points, but like he would get them wrong about socialism and other things. So today I have a clip for you that's really emblematic of a lot of the COVID disinformation that's floating around. Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene has been a big voice against vaccine requirements, against masks, in favor of various unproven treatments for COVID, including ivermectin. She appeared on Real America's Voice recently and hilariously claimed that ivermectin won a Nobel Peace Prize. Now, there's two layers of confusion here. I won't explain them yet. Let's look at the clip.
Ivermectin is a very good drug. Its safetiness has been proven for decades. It even won a Nobel Peace Prize. And it is absolutely irresponsible for the Biden administration, the CDC, Dr. Fauci, and any of these doctors to be advising people to not prescribe it.
Isn't that just the best? So two layers of confusion here. First of all, ivermectin didn't win any Nobel Prize, and it definitely didn't win a Nobel Peace Prize. There are two scientists, William Campbell and Satoshi Imura, won a Nobel Prize in 2015 for discovering that a modified version of ivermectin called avermectin could be used to treat infections caused by roundworm parasites. Nothing about a Nobel Peace Prize, nor anything about ivermectin to treat COVID. So consider the fallacious reasoning here. But this is the type of stuff these right-wingers love. They latch onto it. Marjorie Taylor Greene says, or implies, we should be giving ivermectin for COVID to people because ivermectin won a Nobel Peace Prize. And then you look at it. Ivermectin didn't win any prize, especially not a Peace Prize. Two scientists won a Nobel Prize in medicine for their discovery that a different compound based on ivermectin called avermectin could be used specifically for treating roundworm. And her view is Nobel Peace Prize, give it to people for COVID. But it just gets repeated and repeated. You hear it once. Ivermectin won a Nobel Peace Prize or Nobel Prize. And suddenly you hear the talking point everywhere. And it is everywhere. It spreads uncontrollably without any real investigation. The reason Marjorie Taylor Greene got in trouble here, by the way, is that Nobel Peace Prize is like a little too much. So there's been more fact checking, like really a Nobel Peace Prize? That doesn't make sense. Had she simply said Nobel Prize, this would almost certainly have continued to spread without even more fact checking of it done, which fortunately did take place. Sadly, her reelection is likely to happen. She's in a very red district. Back in February, March, there were articles saying, oh, she's got a tough uphill battle, big primary challenger. As far as I was able to find this morning, no serious Republican primary challenger to Marjorie Taylor Greene, and it is not looking good at all. So we may well be dealing with another 2 years of Marjorie Taylor Greene and another 2 years of exactly this type of just humiliating nonsense. I have a voicemail number that you can call anytime you want. This is an anti-vaccine caller who's been calling in for a while. She took up a full 3 minutes today on the voicemail. That's the max. It cuts you off. Let's listen to a little bit of it. It's some pretty full-on stuff.
Yeah, remember when you got to go to some clinic somewhere and get your vaccine ahead of the crowd there?
Yeah, that didn't happen.
Wow, talk about being a dickhead. Listen, guess what? That wears off. You got to go get another one. Like, that's not a setup? Billions are being made, and that's why they're turning away any other possible solutions.
There's no evidence of that. I mean, billions are being made, but there's no evidence of the second part.
Say you got a bad cold, right? But you got...
By the way, it sounds like Roseanne Barr, but I know Roseanne's politics aren't like this.
Ibuprofen, you got cough syrup, you got your basic at the drugstore, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to go to the emergency for that. But they've taken away something that someone could take before they got in a position where they needed to go to an emergency room. And yes, steroids are a really bad drug. Unless they're helping you not die.
So steroids haven't been taken away. I mean, it's pretty typical that for certain COVID, you give dexamethasone, or maybe they're using prednisone. And we know about the effect of steroids. I mean, it does suppress the immune system to a degree, but maybe allows healing to take place. There's nothing new. There's nothing controversial there.
They're helping you not die. God damn, how much is Pfizer paying you for this bullshit?
You know what's funny about that? It's actually the anti-vax people that are being paid. When the science is clear, you don't need to pay anyone to report on the science. And this is a very good point that was made to me in the email, which is, David, you know, when people write to you and they say, or they leave a voicemail saying, you're getting paid to promote the vaccine. First of all, there's no evidence anybody's being paid to promote the vaccine. But you don't really need to pay people to just look at science and report it. Whereas we know of prominent anti-vaxxers actually being paid, influencers.
Really? How much are you? You must be raking in the bucks, man, to be going attacking ivermectin, a human drug that's used worldwide for years, and it's on the World Health Organization list of essential drugs for humans.
Well, as we talked about before, used for roundworm parasites. So this is just a peek into the voicemail. We've got a great bonus show for you today. In the midst of all this, Texas Republican Governor Greg Abbott is banning all vaccine mandates. France will ban plastic packaging for most fruits and vegetables. That seems logical, right? And we'll talk about Samsung's continued struggles with their foldable mobile phones. What's going on there? Trouble in tech paradise. All of those stories and more on today's bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com and you will...
You're listening to WRCT. Feedback Radio.
Hello, I'm Meg Lee Chin, and when I'm in town, I like to listen to WRCT 88.3 FM.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm Mary.
From High
Places.
And you're listening to WRCT
88.3 FM.
FM.
A radio.
Hey, this is Marlon Saunders, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
You're tuned to WRCT Pittsburgh's automated.
Hello, this is Adam Clayton here, the bass player from U2. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT.
WRCT Pittsburgh, we're always here for you.
It's been a long time since you've touched the hand and the heart of that special someone. You're not alone. This is WRCT Pittsburgh's Radio Automation Service. Stay tuned for more tracks from our radio and record library.
Hi, this is Felicia Collins from Late Show with David Letterman, and you are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me. For all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one song.
Sure.
All right. Yeah.
Are we still taping?
Yeah. Sure. Go right ahead.
We're live. We're not taping.
Oh, we're live.
No,
okay.
We're taping.
Okay. They want me to do a little promo, and what do I do? I say, WRCT. Is that it?
WRCT Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Hello and speedy delivery. This is Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and I'm in Pittsburgh. I always listen to WRCT right here in Pittsburgh. Speedy delivery to you.
There. This is MC Honky, and you're listening to WRCT. Pittsburgh.
Hey, this is Ben Foles, and you're listening to WRCT. It's 2 for Tuesday, 3 for Thursday, Ladies Night Wet T-Shirt Contest on 88.3 FM, biatch.
Thank you.
Hi, you're listening to
WRCT.
Pittsburgh. CMU. This is Sue Garner.
And Rick Brown.
Have some barbecue sauce.
Senator John McCain, and I'm from Arizona.
but when I'm in Pittsburgh, I always listen to WRCT, one of the finest stations in all of radio, and Carnegie Mellon University is one of the finest academic institutions in our country. Be sure at your next election to vote early and vote often.
Hi, this is Kristen Hirsch. You're listening to 88.3 FM, WRCT Pittsburgh.
WRCT Pittsburgh. Automation is the key. I am Dr. Jazz Pete.
Hey, this is Tom from the band Loose, and you are listening to 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I don't think I can make it all the way up there. It's all the way up the peaks and all the way up the hill.
As the world watches as Star Trek actor William Shatner blasts off into space above the harsh West Texas desert, we spend the hour looking below at a tragic story from the region, the disappearance of a longtime U.S. resident who crossed the border in an attempt to reunite with his family in Utah. Armando Alejo Hernandez hasn't been heard from since early May. We'll speak with his 17-year-old son and Armando's brother, then look at the broader crisis along the border, where an unknown number of migrants are dying of dehydration and heat stroke.
The Border Patrol station is making these people walk in that deep sand with very little water.
I'm trying to have some information regarding a family member who is missing.
There's been a lot of missing people.
We'll speak to the leaders of two human rights groups in Texas, as well as the co-director of the new documentary Missing in Brooks County. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. will open its land borders with Canada and Mexico next month for people fully vaccinated against COVID-19. The borders have been closed since March 2020 for non-essential travel. A Food and Drug Administration panel is meeting this week to consider booster shots of Moderna and Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccines. Moderna said an additional half-dose shot provided a significant immune boost, but FDA scientists indicated Moderna data has not met all criteria for a third dose. Two Texas-based airlines, Southwest and American, said they'll still require their workers to get vaccinated despite Republican Governor Greg Abbott's new order banning vaccine mandates by any entity, including private businesses. The airlines will continue to abide by the proposed federal mandate on vaccines for private companies, which could be finalized soon. The order would apply to businesses with 100 or more employees and require workers to be vaccinated or get tested regularly. In Wisconsin, two mothers whose children contracted COVID-19 have sued their local school districts for neglecting to implement safety measures, including mask mandates. Both the parents' children wore masks, but many other students, including actively sick ones, did not. In New York, a federal judge ruled Tuesday health workers could be granted a religious exemption to the state's vaccine mandate while a legal challenge plays out in court. In economic news, the International Monetary Fund cut its global growth forecast and warned of inflation due to the summer's Delta coronavirus surge and disruptions to supply chains. The House of Representatives approved legislation Tuesday evening to raise the debt limit until early December. Not a single Republican voted to raise the debt ceiling, even temporarily. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi addressed her Republican colleagues ahead of the vote.
What do you have against our own economy, where this catastrophe of unbelievable proportions could have impact for over 100 years?
The measure, which the Senate approved last week, is expected to be swiftly signed by President Biden. In other legislative news, a group of New York Congress members wrote a letter to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, urging them to keep the current funding for housing, transportation, and immigration reform in the Build Back Better Act. "We can't negotiate the reconciliation bill down to nothing," tweeted Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. The White